For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with another weekly look at the world of non-league football. The beautiful game, the world of non-league football, it's magical for the people within it. A few years ago, the pandemic did its best to impact and tear it apart, but it came back stronger, and we came back stronger. This season, a new force threatens to rip apart our world, a natural force that surely can't be controlled. The weather across the country has played havoc with the playing season. Games postponed, games abandoned, and a fixture pile-up with an FA hardline backstop that leaves many clubs with back-to-back days to play matches just to complete the season. We speak to one man who has tried to rally the troops for change. Colne FC are one of those who face a multitude of matches in a matter of days, with burdens not only on pitches and players, but also volunteers and fans. Media man Ben Metcalf admits he doesn't have all the answers, but he does know it's time for change. Rounding up the week's news, it's the Non-League Papers' Matt Badcock as we hit semi-finals of the FA Vase and the FA Trophy and see a multitude of managerial rejigs. Time then to sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. Well, let's start then with a chat about the fixture pile-up. It's a talking point of social media across non-league. And my next guest, well, he's probably added fuel to that in recent days with a well-argued, well-organised argument that his own club schedule of 10 games to go and a need to finish the normal season on the 20th of April is ludicrous. And it's time now that something has to change. To tell us more, it's a warm non-league football show. Welcome to Media and Communications Director at Colne FC, Mr. Ben Metcalf. Welcome, Ben.
Thank you very much. Nice to be on.
Well, it's good to get you on. Just over 24 hours since you posted it, and it struck a chord with, well, many fans, many administrators, and many people in the media. I was only too pleased to that you agreed to come on and let us help you promote what you're trying to say there. And I love the fact that because your manager shares the name of music god Paul Weller, it's also grabbed, I guess, the imagination of others in a broader audience. So that always helps as well. So rather than going underground, it's rather become the news of the world. And hopefully we can also help you shout to the top. But seriously, how hard was it to make that post? Because I guess you were probably in two minds before you pushed send.
In all honesty, I wrote it after Saturday's. We got beat away on Saturday at Prestwich Hayes, and I wrote it after that because it had been something that had been weighing on my mind for a while, especially when we'd had the communication, you know, these fixtures must be played by this date. I wrote it, I left it in the notes section of my phone and just waited for the right time. And I wouldn't say the right time, but after yesterday's postponement, it really, really just hurt. And I felt like something needed to be done or needed to be said to really make a point, because to threaten us, for me, the hardest thing is, you know, we're all volunteers, and to threaten us with relegation through, not through football, it's hard to eat, you know. Skelmersdale United last season got relegated, not through football reasons, from the from the Northern Premier League with us. And I've got to feel for them because this season they've dropped even further. So it's just not ideal.
And, you know, I'd say it struck a chord with many fans. I could probably go through my phone now. I've probably got about 10 or 15 of those notes over the recent season. I mean, as you opened with in the article, you're a board member, but you're important. Yeah. You're a fan. And every week I try to reiterate that almost everybody involved in non-league is a fan. And our tagline still is by the fans, for the fans. And therefore, you can not only talk the talk, but also walk the walk. And this is heartfelt and said for the right reasons, because something does need to be done, because, well, you know, it will impact on people coming forward to help at non-league. It impacts on the future sustainability of non-league clubs. It might seem a small issue, but it really is at the heart of football being able be enjoyed by all of us.
Yeah, of course. You know, I mean, it's not just this season, and it's not just us. You look at every season, there's always, you always see these news articles pop up. And I always think, poor them, or, you know, poor sods. I remember a good few years back when we were first in the counties, Glossop got to Wembley in the FA Vars, and it wasn't weather related. They were just playing an obscene amount of games in a very short period of time. And again, that was because of success, but because of strict guidelines from the powers that be, the season couldn't be extended, and they had to play, I can't remember exactly, but I know that the fans who paid on Monday were still getting in for free on the Friday. And again, you look at Bay Cup every season, it happens, and it's no disrespect to Bay Cup. You know, it's very difficult to maintain certain pitches, ours included. It's not, they're not ideal surfaces to be hit by this sort of weather. So yeah, it's difficult. It really is.
Yeah, and you mentioned, I think you've had, 23 weather postponements, one abandoned, and 9 of those have been away as well. So yeah, it's not just your pitch, it's not just your ground that's affected. Rightly, though, you also point out that those games being off costs both sides each time they're off. You know, it's not just the home side that, you know, maybe ordered food in and misses out, but it's also potential days off for players, volunteers. It needs a change for the long-term sustainability for non-league football.
Yeah, of course. And like you say, it's not just all at home, the away games. You know, I remember playing Ramsbottom a few seasons back, and the pitch were much worse weather-wise and in much worse condition than it was this season. Yet this season, the referee called it off at half-time. I couldn't tell you whether it was the right decision or the wrong decision. That's not for me to say. But the pitches aren't getting any better. Something, you know, people are spending more and more time on them to try and get them playable for games. You know, we've got a groundsman, Richard Harris. He's up there 7 days a week, but he can't. He's literally just watching it at times because it's that wet and that sodden. He can't get on. And again, I have to say that it's not just us. Mm. If it was, I could understand the FA having a problem. But every time we've had a game called off, there's been several others in the league. And I must say that, you know, this is nothing to do with the league. I see it's difficult that the league gets some unnecessary stick at times, but it's not their doing. And that definitely needs to be said, because I think we've missed out on some massive paydays as a club. Boxing Day against our local rivals, Barnoldswick, was called off. Our first game against Paddyham, another local rivals, was called off. It just seems this year more than ever that the weather's just caused.
Am I right in that I read this that you see, the league have done all they can, really, to get the... I think by the 11th of November, you'd already played half of your league games. It's just the weather's been awful since.
Yeah, but by the 11th of November, we'd completed doubles all the sides, not victories, but we'd played sides twice and hadn't played some. It's a strange season, and the fixture people within the counties must tear their hair out, especially early doors when you get clubs whinging about certain fixtures. And I'll admit, I was one of them. We got our non-league day home fixture removed and brought forward, and I was complaining to the league saying, come on, this is a big revenue stream for us. Lo and behold, that game would have been off anyway with the weather. So the league secretary, I think he told me his job is to get the games completed, and you know, I'll apologise to him when I see him. But yeah, we'd played. We definitely completed half the season by middle of November, which is, it just shows you how wet and miserable this winter has been.
Yeah, and we're talking about the next 3 weeks. These games have got to be played. It's shorter periods for some as well. And whilst it might not affect you, it is going to affect others. I see the Met Office in recent hours have issued another weather warning for the west of the British Isles. And we mentioned about the rainfall. I think it's the wettest 18 months since records began up to the end of February. We mentioned that a couple of weeks back. This time we've got gale force winds coming in. And no doubt rain will be interspersed with that as well. Storm Kathleen. And interestingly, I'm quite sad like this, and I've looked at the Met Office. The storm season runs from September to August, so pretty much alongside football seasons in that respect. This year, we're on 11 storms since September start. Last time we hit that number was 2016, so a number of years back, so it shows how bad this year is. And in contrast, last season, just 4 storms. It's been a bad year weather-wise, nobody can deny that. But it just then means that we need a bit of common sense applied to it so that we can enjoy football, get things finished.
Yeah, of course. I mean, as volunteers, it's going to be tough. But for fans, you know, expecting them to spend Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday watching their team, or, you know, these kids that won't be able to watch it because they've got to go home early. It just doesn't make sense in any world that this deadline of the 20th of April is that set in stone. I know the manager won't mind me saying, you know, we're not going to hit the playoffs, or it's very unlikely that we're going to hit the playoffs, but mathematically we still can hit the playoffs, so these games have to be played, and that's the real killer. The FA have said dead rubber games or games that have no real meaning on relegation or playoffs or promotion can be played after, although none have been booked in as of yet. It's irrelevant.
When you've got so many games to play, the chances are that you're going to affect either the top or bottom in some form or other.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And... I'd urge people to go and read your piece on the Colne website. It's at colnefootballclub.com, and you'll see it on the front page there. I think it'll probably be there for a while. Because another big point in it for me, the fact that there is a possibility that the Wembley showcases could have to be adjusted date-wise as well. If Coventry City make the FA Cup final and the playoff final, because they're due back-to-back on the 25th and 26th of May. And it'll be interesting then to see whether fixtures can be pushed back.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've got to acknowledge one of the stators around the club who put it on the forum not so long back, David Moy, and I did think it was interesting, and it's a very good argument to. I really want it to happen just to see what happens, because naturally it will get moved, which does show that the FA will move things, but it's the fact that they hadn't even considered it a possibility that someone could, from the Championship, be in the FA Cup final. In reality, they'd not even considered it to pick those dates and to move such two massive, or one of the fixtures would have to move, and that'd be a massive headache for them. So, fingers crossed, having to do it.
Yeah, and that's the other thing that I loved, and you've touched on it already, and I don't know, you've loved the right word, I'm not sure, because of the way... The reasoning behind it, it's a slightly different angle. So often we hear about the impact on players, which is important, but you mentioned the impact on volunteers, and you've also mentioned the impact on fans as well in our conversation. And quite possibly, those volunteers put in more hours than the players on weeks like these that you're going to have to face now in the coming weeks. And actually, there's not too much scope for volunteer rotation.
No. No, I mean, our volunteers have dwindled throughout the years, and sadly, I'm probably one of the youngest, or I may be the youngest, I'm 35. Naturally, volunteers tend to be the elder people that have retired that want to continue their hobby. And that same at the club. We have got some younger faces in now, which is helping, but there's people retiring left, right and centre. You know, our groundsman's 70 years old on a match day. He'll be up at the ground from 10:30 till gone 7 o'clock on a Saturday, that is. Midweek, it's probably 2 o'clock until midnight, because there's just that many jobs that need doing. You know, and the rest of us that do volunteer have jobs, so we're starting work at 8 or 9 o'clock and finishing at 5 or 6 and getting up there and not getting home till midnight. It is demanding. And, you know, with all these games, we've got a WhatsApp group, and there's people saying, I can do this, can't do that. And it's just trying to decipher and trying to work out. Not the players is a problem, but picking volunteers or getting volunteers, and we're having to do rallying calls to get bodies in just to assist and make sure the game's on, because there'd be nothing more embarrassing than actually getting a game on right now and not having any volunteers to work.
Yeah, and yeah, again, it's just tiring, isn't it? It's mentally tiring, but physically tiring as well. And you know, my concern is that we might just lose people. Looking at your calendar here, I think you can tell me if I've got this right or not. I think because you lost that game, we're talking on Thursday night, so you lost a game on the Wednesday. So we've got the 6th, the 8th, the 10th, the 12th, the 13th, 15th, 16th, 18th, 20th. At one point, that's 4 games in 5 days next weekend.
Yeah, so the game that got lost last night is now the 17th. So we've got the 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th, which it's just not. And again,
have you got sleeping accommodation at the football club? Or
sadly not. And we are on top of an hill, so it would be very cold up there. But it's very disappointing. And the strangest thing is, we had a game abandoned for weather in pre-season. In July, we were playing Uxton Villa, and the flash floods came down, and that was called off. So, you know, something's got to be done now. I don't have the answers. You know, for us, the only way that we can succeed is having a 3G pitch. You know, there's been talks about it for years and years up at our club, and many chairmen have gone in with great ambitions. And unfortunately, you know, our red tape is, it's been very difficult to get over the line. We're going through a similar process right now, so hopefully it could be the last season with grass. Might not be, but it's not just about us. There's thousands of other clubs in same situation, be it Saturday afternoon, be it Sunday mornings. It's just, the game starts at this level and moves its way up, but if something doesn't get done quickly, then the game stops at this level, and the bottom pyramid of English football just disappears, because it's not feasible to carry on.
And I appreciate, you know, I've worn the administrator's hat and other hats, and it's difficult. It's a big challenge, and I know why there is this, you know, they want to have this backstop so that there's lots of other admin and various meetings and decisions that have to be made, and there's always the AGM cup that'll pop up. But there also needs to be this element of common sense that actually, if we keep putting the burdens on volunteers like yourself, we might not have volunteers in the future. If we don't have volunteers, we don't have non-league football.
Yeah, correct. We've gone through a spell of having to try and pay people to work the bar, but as a club, you're not bringing in that revenue, especially when there's no games on. So that's not a possibility. We've got a wonderful lady that works 99% of games and events and stuff to try and bring money in, all for free. And this doesn't happen. It's the beautiful thing of non-league is the community. But as I mentioned, it will slowly fade away, because people are losing hope in the bigger picture, because it just doesn't feel like anybody's being listened to. And when the same mistakes or issues repeat over and over again, and you're expecting different results every time, it is the definition of insanity, and something, it's just not right. Somebody's got to be looking at it saying, this is not right.
And we've had various little groups looking at it. We've now got this potential football regulator. Will it come in at a higher level and not go below the National League, although there may be some impacts further down. But maybe we need a group to look at all these impacts on non-league football and the long-term sustainability. We've got plenty of business plans going in, but there needs to be a way of, you know, battling against the weather. Having, you know, I'm renowned for having more than Plan B and Plan C ready at hand, just so that we don't get time during the football season, do we, to think about these things. It almost needs to be a full-time job by someone else elsewhere looking and reacting with some proposals.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, having other avenues, or the FA stipulate ground grading, which I completely agree, you know, grounds should meet certain requirements. But, you know, in times like this, there's got to be a solution for us to be able to play football. And I'm not saying, you know, we play indoors at a local sport pro. I'm not suggesting that for any anyway. We've tried several other avenues. I mean, you see Uxton Villa are playing at local side Darwin. They're having their pitch renovated, so we've tried to team up with Darwin or speak to them to try and book in pitches, to try and get games gone, but they just fully booked all the time, and we never expected to be in this situation at the start of the season. So, you know, having a plan B going forward, if we don't get a 3G, we'll definitely be at the forefront of our minds. You've got Iron Man, they're coming over and playing us on, I think it's the 18th, and then travelling a couple of miles down the road to Barwick. But that game has to be on because Iron Man, you know, they get a plane over to play us. So, but yeah, I don't have the answers. I just know there's a big problem, unfortunately.
But that's where we all need to shout. We all need to stamp our feet and say, look, someone needs to look at this. It needs to be done. And yeah, we can throw ourselves hats in the ring to offer to help that. But as you say, something has to change. Now, it was always going to be a tough adjustment following relegation from the Northern Premier League West last season down to the Northwest Counties. You've now experienced this season. Has it jaded you, knocked the edges off?
Personally or as a club?
Well, both.
Personally, it gets harder every year. I tell my wife every year it's my last year, but there's something, I mean, I don't know whether that's a lie or something I'm trying to, you know, actually give up, but there's something about it that I love and I can't give up because of the people there, whether it's the five people behind the bar or in the clubhouse on a match day, or whether it's the 200, 300, 400 fans that are there. There's just something that attracts you to non-league. I've been involved for, like I say, over a decade, and I can't seem to pull myself away regardless. As a club, you know, the elder people, or the elderlier than me, are, you know, they've had their time and they're ready for knocking it on the head because it's just getting more and more demanding. And especially this season with the additional 8 games, and then, you know, all your cup competitions, which you need the money from the cup to try and keep your club going, but you don't want that many games on your pitch because you don't want them battering. It's a chicken and the egg situation. I'd say this at the end of this season, we'll certainly lose 3 or 4 volunteers through this season's experience, and that's no one individual's fault. It's a culmination of the age and the demand of this season. Yeah,
yeah, and that's no good if people are losing their love of non-league football for whatever reason. Ben Mankow, I think we could talk forever, but I better leave you because I think you've got a few games to organise, and I'm hoping you're sharing a programme for some of those nights, because otherwise you're never going to get to bed, are you, organising programme for all of those?
Definitely not, but yeah, that will be shared. someone needs some help, so...
Well, good stuff. Ben Metcalf, thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. Best of luck to Colm for the rest of the season.
Thank you very much.
Time once again then to head on over to a Non-League Paper Towel. So welcome back once again to the Non-League Football Show. Editor at large at the Non-League Paper, Mr. Matt Badcock. Welcome back, Matt.
Thank you, Tim. How are you?
Yes, I'm in full decorating spirit and in full football flow as well, which is good because this weekend, FA Vars and FA Trophy semi-finals. FA Trophy, Bromley Solihull Moors would make a great final, but as probably would Gateshead Macclesfield.
Yeah, it's going to be some fascinating games. this weekend. So you've got kind of the slightly stranger one of Worcester and Great Wakeham didn't play last week, so they got their first leg. So we won't know all four. We won't know all four finalists for non-league finals day, but we'll have a pretty good idea, won't we, of the everyone else. So yeah, it's going to be fascinating. And obviously Gates have got there last year, lost to Halifax in what you'd probably describe as not the greatest game of football in the world. So they'll be, you know, very keen to get back there flying at the moment. You know, probably want to go there twice where they're going at the moment, Gates. I don't know, but Macclesfield is going to be an interesting one. You know, I spoke to Michael Clegg when he went in there only a few weeks ago now as manager after Alex Bruce left for Salford City. Kind of one of the things he did mention was, you know, we've got a chance to get into Wembley here before the quarterfinals, but you know, that was kind of one thing that was on his mind. And obviously we know Macclesfield Town's history with the FA Trophy as well. And then, say, Bromley won it a couple of years ago, didn't they? Yeah. So they'll, I think I'm right in saying they haven't been to Wembley. Obviously they got to the promotion final a couple of years ago. That was played at the London Stadium. So, yeah, definitely going to be interested in the FA Trophy, and then looking forward to seeing how those games shake out. And likewise in the Vars.
Yeah, well, as you say, yeah, that Great Wakeham Rovers Worcester City first leg, which wasn't played last week, flipped over to Worcester City this weekend. And then Lincoln United hosting Romford after a 2-2 draw in that first leg. Hopefully, looking at the weather, it's going to be the western side of the country is going to be maybe battered by the forthcoming storm. So hopefully, as you say, we'll know at least three out of four of those finalists. But when you're planning as a football club for such a big game as, you know, Wembley may be, what are we talking, May the 11th? Even that seems not too far away.
Yeah, I just feel like it's all rapidly approaching. I was looking at something earlier, and looking at a team's running, you think, oh, we've got four games left. We really are down to crunch time now, aren't we? And as you say, these are huge games in all their seasons in the Trophy and Vars this weekend, but for the Vars sides as well. You know, you say Lincoln and Romford are 2-2, all to play for. You know, it's kind of history at the kind of could be theirs at the end of a kind of quarter to five on Saturday, if not later, if we go through to penalties, and it's all there for them. And that's why I sort of love this weekend and these competitions because of the prize. And it'll be very quickly on to finishing their league campaigns. And as you say, there's all the sort of things but all four clubs in the Trophy have got to play for, and likewise in the Vars. So but it will be very quickly here, and it's a lot earlier this year, isn't it? Normally finals day, we've sort of gone to the back end of May, so a lot earlier this year, and you know, it'll be a quick turnaround at the end of the season, that's for sure.
I suppose non-league players don't wear suits nowadays, so you know, at least the tailors haven't got to worry too much. It's probably maybe a new tracksuit for those sides that do get to Wembley. But I mean, you say that, you know, the season's very much at the end of the season, very much nearly upon us. We've covered the fixture pile-up issue earlier on the show with Colne. But as I say, a new weather warning's coming in. There's already a Herculean task for clubs, players, volunteers, just to get games on. But it may just become physically impossible, really. When I look and see, you know, Truro, they've got, 10 games to play in 20 days, I think, including 7 at home. And they're not even at home because they're going to be at Gloucester City.
Yeah, it's kind of the weather's just been crazy, isn't it? I mean, we said that a couple of weeks ago, it feels like every Tuesday when these games are often scheduled to get in, it just hammers down all day and more and more games go off. And there were, I can't remember anything quite like going into this sort of part of the season where you're losing so many games on Saturdays and in midweek, and it's becoming, you know, very frustrating for all. And as you say, Gloucester City on them to keep their gates open even longer on Saturday with a late game there, and last minute game. We obviously Mason game there on Wednesday night, when they it was Taunton who went there instead, didn't they? So it's been it's been really frustrating, and as we always say, it's not great for the players and the health of the players. You know, they're being asked a lot of demands on them. And hopefully, it's kind of you can never plan and predict the weather, but I guess it does need to be looked at a little bit next year, and some of the leagues that are struggling and can more be played earlier on and things like that, because it's become a real issue that kind of nobody wanted and nobody really expected as well. That's the frustrating thing. It's kind of out of your hands, as you know, whether the weather gods are not smiling down on non-league football this year, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I think that's the problem. It's one of those factors that none of us can control. We can sort of, you know, alter some of your behaviours, you know, sort of planning when those fixtures are being. But it's still, you know, this year's weather is actually much worse than it was last year and the year before. And, you know, that may mean that that's the way that the weather's going, or it may mean that next year is going to be full of sunshine and we'll have multiple stoppages during the game so that we can all have drinks break all the way through the season. Who knows? But you mentioned that National League switch, Taunton Town playing their game against Manchester United at Gloucester City in the week after their own pitch failed an inspection on Tuesday morning. The game was switched immediately then for that evening to Gloucester City to get the game played, because they need to get these games played before the end of the season. But again, that's not helpful for fans. I think there were 20 mates and supporters who were there Tuesday evening in the end. But as much as we want games played, we also need to consider the fans, I guess. Already I've heard a number of contingency plans to vary some of the games that are already scheduled in the last weeks of the season in case more games are lost. So I understand the practical sort of point of view on that, you know, these games need to be slotted in if they can't be played. You know, I think there's some games, we're speaking Thursday afternoon, I think there's some games this evening that are maybe in doubt because of the downpours up and down the country. The switches now will allow for maybe one game on, one game off, or one day on, one day off for games to slot in with those schedules. It's a practical approach, but as we heard and spoke about so much time during COVID times, football is nothing without fans. And if we potentially lose them, they can only be pushed so far, can't we? We've got cost of living issues, meaning travel and entry to multiple games in a week maybe isn't viable for many people already. And then if we turn the screw and have last minute venue changes, when people have booked days off work, but maybe booked train tickets, maybe booked hotels, you risk losing people for good. And that's not just the fans, but also the volunteers, who we know are already a dying breed. And it's fine me saying that, but I'm not even sure what the solution is.
No, I think that's the hardest thing, isn't it? You know, what are the right answers? And as you say, for fans, as we, you know, as we both are, we know that we do sort of kind of crazy things, don't you, as fans? And you kind of just kind of, you might moan about it, might grumble about it, but still you're there supporting your team through thick and thin. And but yeah, there's a real, yeah, it's difficult for many people, and that shouldn't be underestimated, and that's sort of the strain that it's putting on everybody. And you know, as we've said many times before, there's so much that needs to be done at the end of the season. Getting all these games in is so crucial. But yeah, it's not a, I suppose in many ways it's not a new problem. I remember years ago there were teams and playing, like, you know, every day through the week, sort of. You may remember better than me, and maybe the listeners will as well, but
you get to my age, your memory goes.
Quite a few years ago, I'd put you on the spot, but Hendon, and did they have a certain amount of games in a week, and there's contingency to play a game, a double header on a Saturday?
I remember times of double headers.
But they didn't play it, did they, or no. Something like that? Yeah.
Obviously, you know, the world of health and safety for all the right reasons and red tape has sort of changed even the way of thinking. And I think that's probably why we've lost a number of games. You know, I've seen games called off this year that in, you know, maybe 10 years ago, certainly probably would have been played. So maybe that's a thing. And as you said, the reason that the FA doesn't want to extend the season is because there's so much to do at the end of the season. And it's almost as if football... I think for some people, football ends when the season ends, whereas people involved, embroiled in administration, whether that's clubs, whether that's leagues, whether that's higher up authorities, football almost begins when that season ends. And that's when everything everybody's running around, doing lots of things very fast. But maybe the season needs to be shortened so that those people at the top can have some thinking time.
Well, I think also you've got the playoffs this year at step 5 and 6, haven't you, which, you know, is another sort of extra kind of week of football on top of. I know we've had interstep playoffs the last couple of years. But there's all the playoffs to get in. And whilst it is sort of generally a bit earlier this year across the whole, because of the way that the days are sort of falling, National League, for example, they're playing there finishing on the 20th of April, aren't they? Which is kind of much earlier than in the last sort of few years. So, there's just so much. It's kind of it doesn't stop, and there's so many demands. And we know yourself. As soon as the season finishes, often we're like, well, when are the fixtures out? When are the club allocations out straight away? Before you've even kind of left the ground in some cases. And it's such a, there is so much to do. There's like appeal processes to go through around club allocations and all that kind of stuff. And that is why it is so tight for everybody. And, it's definitely not a case that the season finishes and guys at the FA and all the leagues and all the committees and everything sort of sit there for a week and sort of have a meeting about a meeting. They kind of have to get on with it straight away. So it is... There is a lot to do, and as you keep saying, it's getting that balance, isn't it, of player health and keeping the integrity of competitions and all that kind of stuff that we always hear about. And it's just been an unfortunate one. And you talk about COVID and there being no fans in the ground. And my memories of COVID through a lot of this kind of period was how great the weather was, and we were just stuck at home and couldn't get out. And just when you'd love to get out, watch a game of football and. Now it's sort of, it's every day the rain is tumbling down and keeps on coming. But hopefully it can relent and games can get in and be played and finished and we can start talking about all the good stuff that comes at the end of the season as well.
Well, there is lots of good stuff and we'll get to that. But one other point I thought I should make as well is a. It just shows the number of factors that impact on games that we play and the way that football flows. Income streams, as many as possible are required. Clubs need to be creative in that sense as well. But is it maybe plausible for three, four grass pitches still to be used as a ground share? I'm looking at the Combined Counties Premier North. You've got Reading City there with, 12 to play before the season is out. And they've also got to juggle all that with their host, Woodley United. So, maybe that's another one up for debate. But when do these authorities get a chance to discuss that, think about that? Do we need another football task force to maybe look at these potential issues? But as I say, next year it might be as sunny as you mentioned during those COVID months.
Yeah, and that's the thing, like you say, we're dealing with something that we can't control, and that is, next year used to say that we don't have a really terrible kind of frost over the winter. It hasn't been that sort of bad, really, the sort of last couple of years sort of from memory, but it's the wet weather has been impacting, and pitches have been suffering, and it's kind of like catch-22, isn't it, of you can sort of change everything around and make loads of decisions and then sort of cause yourself another problem. So it is I think everyone People are aware of it, aren't they? I think that's the thing. No one sort of like.
Well, I think you're right. I think you're right to point out that there's no one at the FA, no one at the leagues that it gets to the end of the season and then they all put their feet up and get the pipe and slippers out, as many would like to think, and put their feet up and enjoy a glass of port. There's lots of people planning, thinking, and doing lots of work. And actually, we could probably do with more of those type of people, just because there's so many jobs to do. Yeah, and on a positive note, because we always look for the positives, of course, banging the drum for 3G pitches, probably that's probably booming as loud as ever, all these weather impacts. And as you mentioned earlier, not so long ago that we were speaking about Gloucester City and their future hanging in the balance, and now, well, they're playing home to themselves, Truro City, Taunton Town this week. I'm sure their end of season accounts will look much better. Yet despite all of that, I was on a Zoom meeting this week about the banning of rubber granules in 3G pitches across Europe in a few years' time, and what impact that might have in the UK. There's pluses and minuses, and sometimes, like any sort of seesaw, it has to fall one way or the other.
Yeah, and you said there's big expense that comes with 3G pitches, obviously laying it down and have to be replaced as well. I guess as there's more and more of them, there's demand also outside of football that has to be weighed up, isn't it? How many people are going to be coming and playing in the week on there and training on them, and it's not the right answer for all clubs, but for some it is, and we've seen the sort of the positive impact it's had at many clubs, and I'm sure on development as well. And the technology's got so much better even in the last few years since they've since they've come in the first instance. And there's kind of still that thing hanging there, elephant in the room, that at the moment you still can't get promoted into the football. Well, you can get promoted into the football league, but you have to rip your pitch up straight away. And again, that's a consideration for clubs as well. Look at Sutton and Harrogate, who have gone up, and it's the first thing they have to start doing is rip up their business model, basically. So there's lots to sort of consider around it. I think sort of generally, obviously, I've seen some of the investment that goes into grass pitches. You go to all levels, and pitches at this stage of the season are fantastic and beautiful. It's not. There are sort of the stereotypical mud baths. You can see that in the Football League. And that's the thing this year. We've seen Football League games going off quite late into the season as well for waterlogged pitches. But, you do see some of the great work that is going on out there, and how good some pitches are, even with all this bad weather. So there's lots of, it's such a broad church, and there's such a vast spectrum of different things going on. It's hard to kind of come up with that one solution that's going to fit everybody, I guess.
Yeah, but it is a great place to be, though, non-league, isn't it? Crowds. We mentioned last week with John the positive impact of non-league day. Attendance is up across non-league day. But even with higher level football back on across Easter, we had, a whopping National South record, 6,462 people at Yeovil on Good Friday. Then on Bank Holiday Monday, when, again, we'd had a bumper weekend of football across the pyramid, we saw 8,337 at Chesterfield, 6,868 at Southend, 4,712 at the abandoned Weymouth match, 4,578 at Altrincham, 4,262 at Aldershot, 5 over 4,000 across the non-league game. When we're talking about, 10 years ago, football and how it was, I don't think we would have been reporting on that many games of such high attendances, and attendances up across the rest of the pyramid in many places too.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's been amazing the last few years, and I just think it shows, many, many things. So one, how strong non-league football is, and how people enjoy going out to watch non-league games, how many people know about, non-league football now, and also shows that appetite for live football as well. And I think that's the real strength for non-league is that's what it's all about, is that live, being there, smelling the onions cooking and all that kind of thing. It's is that the experience of non-league football is about going. It's a participation kind of thing. You know, you're not just sat there at home watching it through a screen. It's about, you know, it's everything that kind of comes with it around the game. And I think that's what people really, really love and really enjoy about it. You know, as we sort of said before, there's a fair few fans watching non-league football with big crowds who rather they weren't watching the team in non-league. And but that sort of shows, you know, kind of how big some of the clubs that have come down are as well. You know, talk about Chesterfield, and they'll be on they go. But, you know, I remember kind of when I was more sort of growing up and, you know, non-league's kind of top flight, it'd be, you know, a handful of clubs would kind of get over, you know, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, that kind of thing. It'd mainly be, you know, you'd still have quite a few in there, it'd be sort of 600, 700, 800 kind of thing. And, you know, and kind of almost, see, with a few exceptions, you know, the vast majority of clubs do get four figures each week, most weeks now. So, and even right through, and you even see massive crowds at step 4 or 5 football as well, aren't we? And that just shows kind of the potential that's out there for so many clubs. And it just is that, you know, if you can give people a great experience, they'll come back time and time again.
Yeah, well, hopefully. Clubs in crisis, unfortunately, still an ongoing one. And we've mentioned about, you know, maybe clubs, hopefully clubs will all get their games finished and that won't have an impact on the AGM Cup this season. But it could still be massively affected by clubs withdrawing or maybe formally requesting relegation. We're hearing about a number of clubs that are sort of on the brink there. Do they get their resignation in before the AGM of the league, before the end of the season, so it impacts in that division or across the steps? There's a multitude of variations that may come in there. And then we've also then got Southend United. We've heard from the Justin Rees-headed consortium looking to buy Southend United that they've always been very open, very transparent all along. And last month, they gave us an update on progress with various bits of due diligence and the local authority, various financial bits, with an end of April target date in mind and mooted. This week, however, there was a warning from them that at least one creditor might not be prepared to wait that long, which could see the club in court again, facing another winding up order. That's not going to be good for the club, not going to be good for the team, not going to be good for the fans, or possibly rivals in the table. And I just fear that maybe is that openness because of a fear of another potential points deductions. You know, we still also haven't even heard anything about those potentially missing ground grading deadlines up and down the pyramid. There's a multitude of things that, while we're all talking about fixtures, maybe, you know, beyond that might impact on the final tables.
Yeah, and again, it's kind of going back to why, you know, everybody's so keen to, you know, get the seasons finished on the sort of the scheduled time, because of all this stuff that is going to come into play. There will be teams that, you know, you'd imagine that will look for a voluntary relegation. You have to imagine there will be teams who do fail ground grading. You know, it happens. These are the things that happen every year, and those things, depending on when they happen, have a different effect. Obviously, the rules have changed a little bit now, haven't they? Where after AGMs, or, you know, once the allocations are out, we've seen, you know, one club go somewhere, resign or fold, and then the sort of the domino effect is vast and great. And there's been a lot sort of the rules have been kind of adjusted now, haven't they? So there's not as much impact, which has definitely been definitely helped. But yeah, going on to the South End, yeah, the fans again sort of pissing through the mill and just desperate for this takeover to kind of fully go through. And you know, you kind of wonder if sort of the openness is probably kind of trying to put a bit of pressure on kind of the process as well to make sure that it does go through. And then hopefully the club can actually really start looking forward. It's kind of been there, feeling like it's there, and it's just getting everything across the line. And yeah, it's just a difficult situation that's kind of been dragging on and on and on, and just when you think the end's in sight, something else crops up. But, you know, you have to hope that it will be resolved and get through as quickly as possible, and the club can kind of actually properly begin this new year. I think, you know, the consortium said they have been putting money in and paying, you know, they've already paid out a lot of money already. And this is kind of an old debt that needs to be sorted as well. So hopefully it can be as quickly as possible. And, you know, Kevin can actually kind of start doing his job, you know, and all his staff there, and can really, you know, go into the summer with a lot of optimism and really start building for next year, because that National League is going to be so open next year. It's going to be a few clubs fancying their chance to get out of it. And you'd fancy a Southend that's coming off a real sound footing and foundation would be in that mix.
Yeah, and I do wonder sometimes whether actually if I concentrated on my stamp collection when I was smaller rather than football, you know, my life might just be just smoother and just sort of, you know, rather than all these bumps and ups and downs that we experience as fans, as you say, or journalists, is sort of feeling the pain of other people as well. The managerial merry-go-round.
I definitely wouldn't be grey if I didn't. Yeah, well, I definitely wouldn't have grey hair at 38 if I. if I hadn't got into football, I think I'm pretty sure about that.
I always think he's made us more rounded people. Yeah, some of us more rounded than others, I know. But it's just like
that's another good thing about football. It's the burgers, the non-stop burgers at the ground. The food's got so much, it's so good. That's what's made a lot of us round him.
But you learn so much, don't you? Even my background as a lawyer, I probably learned more about the court process as a non-league journalist than I probably ever did working as a lawyer. But I can also, I'm speaking to people that have been involved in the non-league game for as many years as me, or maybe beyond, some that are, you know, maybe slightly newer to it. And we just need to be careful. There seems to be a number of people that are just losing their love for the game. And the managerial merry-go-round, we thought it might slow down, but it's in overdrive again. And I can't ever remember as many managers announcing their intentions to leave their clubs at the end of the season. Whether that's leaving football, it might just be leaving the clubs, with so many weeks to go, as we've had in recent weeks. The big ones this week, we've got long-serving managers too. Luke Garrard to leave Boreham Wood, having been there since 2015. Ian Skinner leaving Ashington, that we've spoken to many times in recent years on the show. David Big stepping down after 9 years at Eastern Counties Heacham. And also in Eastern Counties, we've got Dunmow Town. They've already announced they're vacating their ground share at Heybridge Swifts, and now at the end of the season they'll have an empty dugout because Paul Hayes and his backroom staff are departing. Is that people losing their love for the game, or is it just that even managers need to change and clubs need to change just to make progress?
Yeah, I think it's probably more along that sort of second part of it. You know, there's just been so much turnover and change generally, and I think it reflects kind of the way we are. I think it seems a lot more short term these days, doesn't it? And you know, the ones you mentioned at the beginning, like Lee Gard, and you know, it's sort of rare for a manager to be at a club for so long these days. And it's kind of, you know, particularly non-league football, you look through the years, there's so many, you know, managers just kind of part of the furniture, been there absolutely donkey's years, and it doesn't seem to happen quite as much these days. The ones who get to really build up into the sort of 5, 6, 7, 8 years, we've been kind of contemplating ever getting into sort of 15, 20 years like we've been so used to. So it's you know, it's just always, you know, it's always change. There's always going to be, you know, Luke Garrard is kind of the big one this week, and sort of I guess a shame to see because of the circumstance that they're in. You know, been on a sort of dreadful run that's just, you know, really put them in a sticky situation. They've got 4 games to get out of it, and hopefully it'll galvanise everybody, and Luke can kind of go out on a high from that point of view. I think the kind of the club statement has said, you know, what he's done for the club will never be forgotten, and you know, it kind of shows again how quickly football turned around. It's only not even a year ago that they were in the celebrating at Barnet, winning the playoff eliminator, going to Notts County, and were so close to kind of getting through to Wembley again. And you know, that's how he has taken them a game away from the Football League in the past, when they lost to Tranmere at Wembley. And I always think back to that day, and you look at Liam Ridehouse got sent off a tremor inside a minute. I think it was like 56 seconds or 54 seconds that got sent off, and kind of how that weirdly sort of changed the game for Bournemouth. Who had, you know, Bruno Andrade that season, absolutely flying, and you know, they were about getting in behind teams and sort of really stretching them, and Tranmere going down to 10 men sort of made them so much tighter. They dropped right back in, and it became really, it became a bit of a slog for Bournemouth to break them down. And you kind of look back and think, yeah, had that been different, would they have been a Football League manager, which it kind of felt like for so long that he's destined to be. And I'm sure, you know, there'll be a lot of clubs who will look at this and say, oh, actually, you know, they want to talk to Luke and see what he wants to do next. You know, after such a long, relentless run like that, you know, they've obviously had their FA Cup runs as well, all that brilliant success. You know, it'd be interesting where he is, if he wants a break, or wherever he is keen to kind of get back in. You know, look at any Football League job that comes up, and his name is in the running for it, he's been linked to it. And I'm sure there'll be plenty who will want to speak to him. But first of all, he's got that job, as we say, to make sure he leaves them in step one. And you know, I'm sure he'll be proud of that and be doing everything he can to achieve that over the coming weeks.
Yeah. Other managers we've seen as well leaving this week. Andy Welsh at Guiseley and also, Will Powell, he's had 8 years at Brighouse Town, been on the show a number of times. But again, just maybe both him and the club needing a change, a bit of a shake-up and change the way things go. So, yeah, hopefully, weather permitting, we won't be talking about too many postponements of the weather. Plenty of league action, FA Trophy, FA VAR semi-final reports, more about the National Game Awards. Anything else we can expect to read in this weekend's non-league paper?
Yeah, I think you're covering off quite well there. And it's, again, it's the...
there's no room. There's games left, you know, right and centre.
There's actually no room. That's the that's the truth of it, because that's part of the season where everything that's happening is on what's happening on the Saturday. Obviously, you've got Tamworth didn't quite get over the line on Easter Monday today. You know, Bradley weren't in the mood for a promotion party in their own backyard, so they swiftly put Tamworth to bed on Easter Monday. That Tamworth got a chance to make it back-to-back promotion, and then the point to mathematically seal it. Back-to-back promotions would be an incredible achievement from Andy Peake. Since he's gone in there a few years ago to kind of turn the club into where they are now, where they're heading, barring something totally ridiculous, I guess, if Geordie did manage to overhaul them on goal difference, it'd be some story that I can't see how they don't get at least another point. but yeah, they need that point. I think Yeovil can win it this week as well. Hornchurch, I believe they can also win their title. We've seen Chesham got over the line on Easter Monday, so we've got some reaction from that in the paper, and obviously Leek Town as well is getting back, you know, a few years coming for Leek. They were sort of hit by the COVID abandonments quite heavily, weren't they? And you know, they're finally kind of back up on the up again. So plenty going on, and as we say, the small matter of the trophy and the bars as well. So lots going on in this week's paper, and also doing the old Sundance to make sure that rain stays away.
Yeah, maybe we need to be a bit quicker with that Sundance. So let's pray for a very warm...
Should have done about 2 months ago, shouldn't we?
Yeah, we need some nice weather and some nice games throughout August and September. That would mean that we wouldn't be so bumper packed in the non-league paper this weekend. Matt Badcock, thanks for all your help once again. Speak to you very soon. Take care.
Thanks, Tim.
And that then is it for this week. Don't forget, you can get involved on social media at Non-League Show. Myself there at Tim Fuel, FUELL. And as ever, you can find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, but also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, iHeart, Geo7, Listen Notes Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Republic, via your smart speakers, and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay safe, enjoy your football. Thank you, and goodbye.